Let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith. Motherhood is never easy, but for one woman, it was almost unbearable. Mary had to watch her firstborn son die on a cross after raising him from infancy. Mary can teach today's moms what devotion and commitment are all about. Stay with us. From the Moody Church in Chicago, this is Running to Win with Dr. Erwin Lutzer, whose clear teaching helps us make it across the finish line. Today, Erwin Lutzer continues the 10-part series on fighting for your family. Now, Dr. Lutzer comes again to speak on a mother's high calling.
And it wasn't easy for her to say to people, "Oh, you know, I am not married, but I'm pregnant, and I had an angel come to me and tell me that this was to be divine." And the neighbors would say, "Yaddy, yaddy, 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 yaddy." This was not easy. But she, first of all, gave herself to God. She embraced her responsibility as a mother. And then she dedicated the little baby, Jesus, to God. Oh, my parent today. And by the way, the next message in the series is to dads. But I am speaking to moms. Will you remember that when you have that child, I want you to visualize God in heaven saying to you, "This is my child, raise him, raise her for me," because you're going to have accountability. And parents, please, and I speak especially, I suppose, to mothers, if you have a great deal of hurt, if you are angry at the child's father because he has walked away and now you're a single mom and there's 100 different scenarios we could tell you, please don't transfer that particular feeling that you have towards the child's father to the child and be an angry mom. Embrace that responsibility gladly, regardless of your past, and say, "Oh God, this child has come from you to me, and you're telling me, raise it for your glory." Listen, Mary didn't know what she was getting into. That's why we're going to be very surprised at the kinds of hassles that she had within her own family. And, you know, Simeon here in this experience says to her, and I realized this, but yesterday afternoon as I read this, it hit me with such clarity. When Simeon says later on there in the temple, he's speaking to Mary. He does not speak to Joseph. Later on, it'll become clear why, but it says here, "To Mary, his mother, he said, 'Behold, this child is appointed for the fall and the rise of many in Israel, and for a sign to be opposed, and a sword will pierce through your own soul also, so that the thoughts of many people might be revealed.'" Motherhood comes with its joys, but oftentimes part of the assignment are sorrows. Mary is going to have to endure that sword, as we'll explain in just a moment, and she's going to have to endure it alone, evidently, without her husband. What a challenge she's going to have. But she didn't know who she was raising. I mean, she knew that he was the divine child, but she had no idea what this meant, and you don't know who you are raising either, my dear friend. This past week, as I was reading a book written by Charles Swindoll, my claim to fame is that he and I are friends, though we're distant friends. He's a great preacher. You've probably heard him on the radio. He's on about 1,000 stations. He says in his book that his parents really didn't want him, that they always favored the older brother. "Why can't you be like the older brother? Yaddy, yaddy, yaddy. And, you know, why did we have you?" And I'm thinking to myself, you were raising Charles Swindoll, for heaven's sake. And you had that kind of an attitude toward him? And you have no idea, no idea who you are raising. Raise him, raise her for Jesus. And you might too live someday to be very pleasantly surprised. The dedication. Next, we have the nurturing responsibility, and this fell on Mary's shoulders. As we shall see also, now this is in Luke also chapter 2, and I wish we could read the story, but we can't. I assume that you know it. His parents are at the Passover in Jerusalem, and he's 12 years old, and they are now going back, and they go an entire day's journey without realizing that Jesus isn't in the company. Now, Jesus had his friends, he had his relatives. By now, probably, he had his half-brothers, some of them certainly, because in total there were four brothers and at least two sisters. And so they think to themselves, well, Jesus is there, and they are with the younger children, of course, who were born later, but they go an entire day's journey and Jesus isn't there. And then they go back to Jerusalem, and I'm just reading the text. It took them 3 days to find him. They were probably thinking, oh, he's playing with the other kids in this suburb or this area of Jerusalem. He's not there, he's not there. What in the world is a 12-year-old kid doing in the temple? So they find him 3 days later. If you ever lost a child, you know, I remember at the condo, and it's a small condo, but one of our grandchildren pushed the button, hopped in the elevator, didn't realize that he was in the elevator alone, got off on some floor, and he thought that it was the right floor because every floor looks like the other one. And, you know, we're thinking, where is he? Where is he? You run up on that floor, and I'll go get this floor. We need to find this kid. How would you like to lose a 12-year-old at a Cubs game? That'd bring some white hair to you rather quickly. So his mother now speaks. She takes the lead here. When his parents saw him, they were astonished, and his mother said to him, "Son, why have you treated us so? Behold, your father and I have been searching for you in great distress." I would think so. And he answers and says, "Why were you looking for me? Did you not know that I must be in my father's house?" Jesus isn't an easy child to parent. He breaks the mold. What do you mean, your father's house? Your father's house is there in Nazareth in the carpenter shop, and that's where you should be. And Jesus said, no, this is my father's house. Not easy to raise. He was always punting the ball to his divine origin and not his human origin. Nowhere in the Bible does Jesus ever call Mary his mother. They're at the feast there, and they need wine. You know, they have no wine. He's saying, "Now, Mom..." He doesn't call her that. He calls her woman. "Woman, what have I to do with thee? Don't invade my space." That's what he's saying. He's on the cross and he's dying. And you can read it there in John 19. And he says, "Woman, behold thy son." And he's looking at John. "John, behold thy mother." But he doesn't call her mother. Why? She was the physical aspect of his being. But he knew he had a divine origin. He knew that he was responsible to his Father in heaven. And so he wanted to, right from the beginning, sever that bond, that physical bond, so that she would realize that he had a spiritual bond, because this was no ordinary child, no ordinary child at all. And, you know, they had to treat Jesus differently than they did the other children. And you have to treat each child differently, because each child has its own bent, its own DNA. And it's not one size fits all. You have some children who are incredibly sensitive. You look at them and they dissolve into tears. You have other children. They need a lot more than that to dissolve them into tears. I happen to be related to someone, and I'll be as vague as possible, who, when he was getting a spanking for eating chocolates, reached over and took another one during the spanking. Well, he also wasn't Jesus, may I say. But Mary has to negotiate that. Now, the Bible does say that he went to Nazareth and was submissive to them, and his mother treasured all these things in her heart. She's trying to figure out all this business of parenting. And Jesus increased in wisdom and in stature and in favor with God and man. He had an ordinary upbringing, but also very, very unique. Don't treat each child the same way. Study the child. Pray for wisdom to understand your child and deal with that child, nurturing them according to God's will. Well, now we get to the real difficult part that Mary had. After this incident in the temple, we never hear from Joseph again. Now, Joseph must have been around, because they did have lots of other children, as we shall see in a moment, but we never hear from Joseph. Everything now falls into the lap of Mary. She has to take charge. There's no doubt in my mind she was one tough woman. Simeon had predicted that a sword was going to pierce her heart, and that sword began very early on when Herod killed all of the male boys in the environs of Bethlehem from 2 years of age and under, the boys, and he did this because he was trying to kill Jesus. So Mary knows immediately, this is because of my son that this is happening. And then she lives through all of those controversies that we read about in the Bible regarding Jesus, when the Pharisees throw it in his face and say, "We weren't born of fornication," implying, "You were. We know your mother. She wasn't married when she had you." Mary had to listen to all that. She had to endure it. And then the fact is that there was controversy in the family. Now, in order for you to understand how many children they had, I'm reading this directly out of the Bible. This is in the 6th chapter of the book of Mark. It says, "Where did this man get these things?" We're in about verses 2 or 3. "What is the wisdom given to him? How can such mighty works be done by his hands?" And now notice it carefully. "Is not this the carpenter's son of Mary? And his brother James, Joseph, Judas, and Simeon? And are not his sisters here with us?" These are all four half-brothers for sure, at least two sisters, because it's mentioned plural. She was managing a household with Jesus as the oldest and six other children. You imagine what that was like?
Well, this is Pastor Lutzer, and I want to say a word to all of the mothers who are listening today. You have an unbelievable responsibility, don't you? I know that Mary, about whom I was speaking, she, of course, was the one that bore the Christ child and had the responsibility of raising Jesus, who was perfect, along with all of the brothers and sisters who clearly were not perfect. What a mother she was. But let me say a word of encouragement to you. As you deal with children, continual focus is needed. And sometimes we as parents become so weary and we think, will this ever end? It will. Be faithful. And as time goes by, you'll be amazed at what God will do through your parenting. I want you to have this series of messages. The series is entitled Fighting for Your Family, and I think that you do agree, don't you, that today we do have to fight for our families because there are so many enemies that are working against us. We're making this series available as a video series along with a discussion guide so that you can talk about these issues in your small groups and in your family. And I'm praying that as a result of listening to God's word and following God's instruction, and remembering God's intervention and God's matchless grace, that there are people who are listening who perhaps are on the verge of divorce, that they will rethink their decision. Good families can become better, and bad families can become good. Stay tuned now for some very important information.
Thank you, Dr. Lutzer. We're hearing A Mother's High Calling, the second of 10 messages on fighting for your family. Next time on Running to Win, how Mary's calling as a mom shows us how crucial motherhood is. Running to Win is all about helping you find God's roadmap for your race of life. Fighting for Your Family is a video series with a helpful discussion guide for small groups. The DVDs and the guide will be sent as our thank you for your gift of any amount to support Running to Win. Just call us at 1-800-215-5001. That's 1-800-215-5001. Ask about fighting for your family. Online, go to offerrtw.com or write to Running to Win, Moody Church, 1635 North LaSalle Boulevard, Chicago, Illinois, 60614. Running to Win is a ministry of the Moody Church.